Well, that gave us a good background to Exodus chapter 14. So if you turn to Exodus chapter 14, I want you to look at several things with me here. Now, you are people who have problems. Do you have problems in your life? And do you sometimes have big problems in your life? Everybody faces those. Things happen. And in Exodus 14, we come at a time where the children of Israel had major problem in their life. In Exodus chapter 14, they have come out of Egypt. They have been traveling in the wilderness. And now they're getting ready to meet up with a great situation. Notice the pattern that followed in their life. And I would submit to you, this is the pattern that I see happening in people's lives time and 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 time. You get the idea. And time again. They just follow this pattern. I think this is the default pattern for humanity when we meet up with problems. Starting in verse 10. Now, let me again just help you with the story. They had made their way to the Red Sea. They're there. They can't go any further. Pharaoh's armies are now chasing them. Okay, so that's where we are in the story. Verse 10. When Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness?" A little bit of sarcasm there, would you think? "Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For we have been better off to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." Yeah, you see their problem, right? They're coming. There's fear. Right after fear, you know what starts happening, right? Complaining. They start murmuring, complaining. They start just going, and then they run to the past. Oh, that it was like it. Oh, I wish. But life is not that way. But that's where people run. They run to what they've known before. And they have sight that turns backwards, and they look for the better days rather than realizing that that's not for them anymore. They're to move forward. Now, Moses comes into the situation, and it changes in his thinking. Look what he says as he comes to them. "And Moses said to the people, 'Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you will see again no more forever.'" God's going to take care of the situation. And so instead of Moses viewing this as a problem that's going to overwhelm them, he saw it as an opportunity for God to work in the setting. I'll never forget the phrase that my pastor, some of y'all knew him when I was growing up, his name's Roy Putnam, used to say. When problems would come, he says, "Whoops, there you are, stranded on the omnipotence of God." Omnipotent means power. All of God's power. You're stranded on God's power. You're left to Him. That's a great place to be. A marvelous place to be. And so he said, don't fear. That's one of the big things that happens to us. We just go right to the fear point, and that's not God's desire for us. Instead, He wants us to place our confidence in Him. The reason we typically fear is because we've viewed the situation and we found that we're not adequate to handle it. Would you agree that's most of the time why we fear? I mean, if you've got big bills coming and you don't have the money, you fear because you don't have the money. If you had the money, you wouldn't fear. You have other things hit you and you don't have the resources to be able to handle them in your strength, and therefore you plug into fear. Well, we need to learn to do it a different way. It's not that we don't recognize the fear. I mean, you can't say don't fear if there's not a possibility to fear, right? you recognize the fear. We're not saying you put your head in the sand and pretend like it didn't take place. That's stupid. You recognize the fear. You see what it is. But instead of relying upon your resources, you go to God. Now, listen, look up here a minute. You've got to go to God with the fear. If you try to handle it, you can't do it. You know you can't. You go to God. So you have confidence in God. Now, notice what else is said here. It's kind of neat how Moses comes into this. Moses continues in verse 14, "The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." You'll be quiet. Just quiet down, because the Lord's going to take care of you. And we need to hold our peace. We need to quiet down. If you catch yourself complaining, you need to stop, because all you're doing is feeding that stuff. You're feeding your fear. You're pouring, I guess gasoline, probably better than kerosene. You're pouring gasoline on the fire. You know what happens, the difference between pouring kerosene and gasoline on the fire? Yeah, one explodes and the other one just burns, right? And so you're just making yourself, you're inflaming the situation. Instead, you hold your peace and you come to the Lord. Verse 15, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward.'" Why would he say go forward? Because they were running, "Oh, if it were just like the way it used to be, if it were just..." Go forward. See, that's the only option that we have in life. Sorry, you can't go back. But you can be locked in the past. And God wants you to go forward. Just go forward. "But lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea." Now, you know what Moses was supposed to do? Divide the waters. How would you like to have that job? I mean, that's what God said. Lift up your rod and you divide it. And then God says these words. It's kind of interesting. "And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they will follow them. So I will gain honor over Pharaoh and all his army and his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. And so it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus was the cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that one did not come near the other all that night. And so here God, after he tells them to move into the future, provides them with major protection. Right? God protects them. And you've got to understand something. If you're trusting after God, God's going to make protection. It doesn't mean that he alleviates the reason for your fear. He doesn't go poof and all of a sudden the Egyptian army vanished. They were there, but God provided protection. And God will protect you. God will provide for you. God will, you know, it's going to feel like you're going to die, but you're not. It's going to feel like you're going to succumb, but you won't if you trust God, if you put your confidence in him. And then after God had provided this, it's interesting, verse 21, it says, "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea." You know why the sea parted? Because Moses did something. He obeyed God. He did what God said. And always through the Scripture, you'll always find, and this is the first principle of Scripture is God's doing stuff. The second principle, and that's what this whole book's about, is what God's doing. The second principle of this book is this: God uses people to do what God's doing. Okay? And so he's going to use you to do things. Now, you can't do everything because it's going to take him networking and accomplishing the task, but he has you doing something. You just don't sit back on your bed and cry and just whine yourself away, hoping that God's going to do. God has you do something. And this is what he had Moses do. "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea." Now notice the second part of verse 21. "And the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea to dry land, and the waters were divided." How did it happen? Well, Moses took his rod and held it out over it. But God caused the wind to blow and dried it out. Now there again, you see God. It's God causing the wind to blow, but He's using a natural thing to accomplish it. Now, did He have to do that? He's God. He spoke and the worlds came into existence. But this is how God's chosen to work in mankind. He uses men. He uses circumstances, situations, and forces that are already here in our world to accomplish tasks at the time and the moment that He has for us to deliver us. Verse 22 says, "So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left." I just think that's a hoot, don't you? I mean, here they're going down into this water. It's bulked up on the sides, and don't know how deep, but usually when you have water, you go down, you keep going down the terrain deeper. It gets deeper in the center before it's shallower at the edges, right? Deeper in the center. So they're going down. As they go down, they got these big walls of water that are just there. Isn't that amazing? Wouldn't it be something? You know, fish, what do the fish think? You know, the fish come swimming and they can't go any further. They hit this wall. We understand glass. I mean, fish in an aquarium might have that kind of experience. But this wasn't glass. This was God just doing something phenomenal. And what will happen is He'll use natural forces that sometimes you can say, yeah, but look at it. But the timing and the power and the accomplishment, it'll be God. God does these things. And so we come to Him. So anyway, we have Moses and the children of Israel walking through. And verse 28:3 says, "And the Egyptians pursued and went after them in the midst of the sea." You know, the hardening of their hearts. What it meant was the Egyptians are going to see this and it's going to freak them out. But they're so bent on getting the Israelites that they don't care. Now, I'm going to show you a video in just a couple minutes of a suggested place for this that I think is the accurate one. And if it's the accurate one, there's an 8-mile stretch between the one place and the other place where they'd come out. 8 miles. That's a pretty good distance, right? If I'm not mistaken, it's 7 miles from here if you get out on East Chester and go to the interstate. All right? So if any of you are going home that way today, watch and see when 7 miles is. The rest of you, wherever you're going, why don't you set your odometers and figure out where 7 miles is. Or it was eight, so figure eight. Eight, that's a pretty good distance, right? That's why they would go through the water. 8-mile thing. And so they come through the situation in the midst of the waters. And it says, "And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen. And now it came to pass in the morning, watch, that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and He troubled the army of the Egyptians. And He took off their wheels, so they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, 'Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians.' Then the Lord said to Moses," you know, here He is using Moses again. Did He have to do this? He's God. But He's chosen to do things this way in our world. He's chosen to use people. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back on the Egyptians, on the chariots, and on the horsemen.' And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea when the morning appeared, and the sea returned to its full, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. And the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and horsemen and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. But the children of Israel walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and His servant Moses." Well, we've got to understand that even though God works, sometimes problems seem to get bigger, right? When the Egyptians were coming after them, it looked even worse. But don't worry about it. God always has His hand working in situations to end the problem. You know, if He hadn't have worked in such a way, if He hadn't had them go through the Red Sea, the Egyptian army would have continued to pursue them. They were a militaristic group that were not held back by borders of countries. They would have continued to pursue them. God instead ended that pursuit in totality, in one swoop. We don't have to fear, folks. We just walk with God. And I think it's true. I can take you to problem after problem after problem after problem that you find in the Scriptures. People act the same way. God acts the same way. And God uses people to work. So I want to tell you something. He wants to use you to work. He'll use you in the lives of other folks. Did He use Moses in the situation? Now, did Moses do the heavy lifting? That means, did he do the major part of the work? Not in this particular situation. He held his rod out, right? I mean, it's a lot more work to get the water doing the thing that it did. God was in charge of that. But He does use individuals. Do you understand that? He uses people to accomplish what He wants to do. He'll do the heavy lifting, but He always uses people to accomplish the task. So it doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter how young you are, God can use you if you're open to being used by the Lord to touch the lives of individuals and help them. Generally, the biggest time you're going to do that is when people are facing problems. Because that, in our day, is about the only time people really care about God. The rest of the time, they're amused with all kinds of other things. You know, they live their life away from God. But when problems come, they seek to go to Him. And our job is to help them to move that way. For a long time, since the 300s A.D., they've thought that the Sinai Peninsula held Mount Sinai. That was started up around 300 A.D., stories about that. And then during the Crusades, it became the tourist spot, and it's just continued that way for years. You can still go in the Sinai Peninsula and go to the old site for Mount Sinai that they said. But newer investigations have tended to think that because the Bible states that Mount Sinai was not in the Sinai Peninsula, it was in Midian, where Moses first saw the burning bush, that it's probably here in Midian, where Midian is. Because that's what the Bible said, it was in Midian. This is not Midian. This is Midian over here. And in this map that we have up, you can see it's a different place. This is the Sinai Peninsula, and over here is on the Gulf of Aqaba. As you go past that, then you have the newer site. I say newer in the sense that it has only been found in the recent years. Though, quite frankly, the locals have known about it for centuries. You know why we can't go there? You know who's in charge of this? Yeah. No, Jordan's higher. Saudi Arabia. And guess what they won't let us do? They won't let us go over there. They narc it as an archaeological site. They have it fenced off. But you actually can go on Google and see it, and I'll put some pictures on the website, and so that you actually can see some of that, because it's kind of interesting to see that. But as they were coming in these wheels, it's kind of interesting to me now that we've had divers, scientists who are divers, and they've gone down in the Gulf of Aqaba. That's back in this place right here. There's an interesting little jut out that's right here. It comes from all the different wadis, that's little creeks that are formed through the mountains area here. And there's a beach that's here that's really big enough to have accommodated the children of Israel on there. Then you cross over the beach, over to the other side, and it would have been easy for them to get over to Mount Sinai. There's a path, and this is a trail, rather, that comes down and goes over the top of the Sea of Aqaba and comes down to this area. That's probably the route that Moses took when he first went to Midian, when he was fleeing for his life. Remember that, after he killed the Egyptian? But God had them deviate from that and go through this area so that Pharaoh thought they had lost their way, that they were locked up in the wilderness. And when they finally came to this beach, there wasn't anything they could do. God opened the water, 8-mile path, because I want you to see how God made provision. It's the old site for Mount Sinai. You don't have the same type setting where you'd be hemmed in. Here, you can see how they would be hemmed in. There's nowhere for them to go. In the Gulf of Aqaba, it goes down some places over 1 mile deep. And it's very steep. So you have the edge, and then all of a sudden it drops and goes down real deep. But right here, because of the water over the time that has been flowing out, even in the time of the Israelis going through this, there's a sandbar that's right here. And it goes down sometimes 90, 100 feet. That's a lot different than a mile, 5,000 feet. And so, and it's sand. The rest of it over here is mud. You step in it and it's going to pull your feet. You ever walked in mud before? It's hard to get along. This is silt or sand. It's been easy to walk over. And divers have gone down, and while they have not found... how long ago did this happen? Yeah, we're talking 3,000 years ago. All right, it's kind of long for things to last under salt water for 3,000 years. But what they have found is... they did find that one. It seems like all the wood's gone away, but there is some metal that's there. And what they found is pieces of coral, and the pieces of coral have 90-degree angles on them. You don't have 90-degree angles on coral. Coral grows just out like this. But coral doesn't grow just on it. It has to have something to grow on. And it attacks... You know, we sink ships out in the ocean, and they're going to have coral all built on them because that's just what happens. And so this coral has formed kind of interesting. This is a 90-degree angle. Do you see that? And they have put a picture in this upper slide of a spoke and an axle and a wheel. As you go in the Gulf of Aqaba, that's on this one they saw on the side next to the mountains. But then they went on this other side across the Gulf of Aqaba, and right before you get up to the other side, they found this one. Which means, if this is that actual site, which I really think it is, I mean, you can't prove anything scientifically as far as history goes. You understand that? To prove it scientifically so that you're 100% sure, you've got to repeat it. Well, history doesn't do that. So what you do in history is you grab as much evidence as you can and you see where the evidence leads you. We'll send you a link. And you can go up on the web and see these different pictures. There's a guy who's from Sweden, DNA research scientist who got his undergraduate in marine biology. So he knows animals in the water. And he came in and he started doing all this stuff. And he's the one who videoed all these things. And they actually have videos. A robotic camera went down and they show you. And it looks just like a debris field. You've seen sometimes where there have been wrecks of airplanes and how the debris just spread all over the place. Well, you have these coral pieces on a sand bed where there's no other coral that's all on this wreckage that's there. And it's an amazing thing to see. I encourage you to take a look at it because so many times the scholars of our society say that the Exodus story is just a nice story along the order of Aesop's fables or Grimm's fairy tales. But it's not really true. Well, we know it is. And we know the reason they say is because we've never found the evidence. Well, you know what? If you look at the wrong place, you're probably not going to find a lot of evidence if you're looking here and it took place over here. But when you look over here, there's a mountain that has the top of it, and the top of the mountain, since I'm not going to show you the video, let me show you this. The top of the mountain is burnt. Do you remember they built an altar while Moses was up on the mountain, and they offered they made a golden image and they were sacrificing to it? So understand, there's this big formation of rocks. You can actually see the formation of rocks from Google Earth, and on the rocks themselves they have drawings, and I'll show you that. This is the place in Saudi Arabia where they have it guarded off. They have a guardhouse right here, fence all around it. You can't get over to the area. They won't let anybody come in because people have snuck in, and so they're now they're trying to keep them out. And the people that snuck in saw this. This is the tallest peak around. Can you tell that it's darkened? You remember there was a rock that Moses hit? And water came out? If you can't see it here, but if you get up closer to it and you're at it, you could see this is water erosion. The rocks are not jagged. Can you tell a little bit that they're rounded? You know how rocks get rounded? All the rocks are rounded. It only happens when water flows out. Boy, if Moses had gone up to this rock that's standing apart from other things, struck it and water comes out. There's also from it a riverbed, a dry riverbed. You can tell there used to be a riverbed there. It really seems like this is the site. There's a movie that's being produced that will be coming out soon, and it's called The Exodus Conspiracy. It's about it's going to go into all this kind of detail. It's a major production. It's costing millions of dollars to produce, and they're going to be showing the pictures, the videos, the actual things, because things have been smuggled out. That's the only way you could get it. You had to smuggle it out. Because what if this is real? Uh-oh is correct. Uh-oh is correct. Well, I just want to go back to remind you. If you're coming up to a problem, trust God. Put your confidence in Him. You can't do it. We know that. That's the reason you feel those tinges of fear. But don't live in fear. Trust God. And then seek Him. Find out what He wants you to do. He's not going to tell you to go take a rod, go over to this part of the world and hold your hand out over the ocean. The reason He won't do that is because you're not in their situation. You're not living in their day. You don't have the same thing. What you face is totally different than what other people face. You need to seek God. He's the same God. He just never does it the same way. So walk with Him. He'll help you.